Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary health care services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 218 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is senior vice president and clinical director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret will be speaking with Dr. Otis Brawley, chief medical officer for the American Cancer Society. In the Tech Report segment, Marianne O'Hare tells us about research into technology that allows tetraplegics to move robot arms with their thoughts. And we begin with this week's bright idea.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Students at Southern Illinois University Medical School are participating in a unique program that is designed to have a lasting impact. Tracy Jo Smith is a social worker in Springfield, Illinois, who launched a program 3 years ago to combat childhood obesity. The Springfield Collaborative for Active Child Health has a number of initiatives to combat the growing problem of obese and overweight children in that community, including one that teams young children at risk for obesity in the Head Start program with local medical students at Southern Illinois. At the recent Weight of the Nation conference, Smith presented details of the program where medical students met regularly with kids, teaching the children about the importance of good nutrition and physical exercise as part of a program for a healthy life. And early results are promising. She says the children in the program are really responding to the one-on-one attention and are incorporating the new healthy lifestyle habits. The medical students get to see the impact their influence can have on the outcomes of their patients' health, so it's a teachable moment for them as well. Smith says she plans to follow these medical students through their residencies and ultimately their practice to chart how their early experience mentoring kids at risk for obesity will impact what they do as professionals. Head Start officials are so encouraged by the initial success of the program, they're seeking additional funding to expand the healthy mentoring to the parents of these children to really have an impact on the broader community. A program that not only helps avert obesity in young children at risk, but also informs the next generation of clinicians to be better stewards of promoting health and wellness. Now that's a bright idea. We're speaking today with Dr. Otis Brawley, Chief Medical Officer and Executive Vice President of the American Cancer Society and author of How We Do Harm, A Doctor Breaks Ranks and Talks About Being Sick in America. Dr. Brawley is an oncologist and epidemiologist based at Emory University Medical School. He is on the CDC's Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection and Control Advisory Committee, and he is the former co-chair of the U.S. Surgeon General's Task Force on Cancer Health Disparities. Dr. Brawley, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you for having me.
You know, your recently published book of How We Do Harm is a clear indictment of the American healthcare system, which you unflinchingly call a subtle form of corruption. And yet you don't blame any one party, not physicians, nor the insurance company or in the pharmaceutical industry. But you say everyone is partly to blame for the fact that we have the most expensive healthcare system in the world, yet rank 50th globally in terms of life expectancy. How is it that we've fallen so far short, in your estimation, of the promise of a decent healthcare system for the United States?
We need to start focusing on preventing illness. We have allowed our healthcare system to be a system that addresses illness, and it's much less a system that actually keeps people healthy. You know, we spent $8,000 per man, woman, and child on healthcare in the United States last year, and that's almost twice as much as the number two country, which, by the way, is Switzerland. We spend more on healthcare than any other country, yet we have such terrible outcomes. And we have so many people who don't get just very basic health care. We have huge gluttony and overconsumption. Some of that overconsumption can actually cause harm at a time where we have a part of the population that doesn't consume enough health care. If we actually were wise about distribution of health care, we could actually improve the health of the very wealthy and middle class who get to consume health care now, as well as those who are poor who don't have health insurance.
You know, the healthcare reform debate, Dr. Brawley, has become quite vociferous in this country, very highly politicalized. But you say the debate is really missing the mark entirely, that we need not just reform it, but transform it. So I wonder how we're going to transform it, because it seems to me that after you read your book, you come away with a sense that the DNA of the system is amiss.
When I say transform, I really mean we need to change the culture. You know, we've done it a couple of times in the United States where we've totally changed the culture of how we think. Look at smoking today. In the 1960s, many young kids in their teens and 20s can't imagine that in the 1960s it was common that people would be walking up and down the street smoking, that you could smoke in restaurants. Even I still have difficulty to believe that some places have actually barred smoking in bars. We have transformed how we view mm-hmm. tobacco usage. Mm-hmm. Perhaps not enough, since 20%+ of Americans still smoke, but we have transformed how we view tobacco. The civil rights movement, that was a transformation in the thinking patterns for many Americans. We're going to have to do the same thing with health care. We're going to have to stress prevention and do the things that are necessary for prevention, get good health care messages out there and health care education to the population. And then patients and their doctors and their health insurers are going to have to do the scientifically proven treatments and preventatives and stop doing a lot of things that have not been scientifically proven. And quite often, we even do things in this country that have been scientifically proven to be harmful. There's a lot of use of vitamins in this country. Hypervitaminosis is actually known to be harmful, yet many people are consuming vitamins and other non-traditional therapies.
Well, Dr. Brawley, I'd like to talk a little more about this whole issue of prevention, at least in terms of screenings. At the American Cancer Society, of course, there's a quest to cure cancer, which we all appreciate, and early detection is one of our best weapons. And yet you say that maybe too many resources are being spent, maybe wasted, on unnecessary screenings, and that perhaps too many patients are being overtreated once they are diagnosed. And you gave a speech on the subject recently where you cite the American Cancer Society as having an unfounded policy regarding prostate cancer screening, certainly something that's been very much in the news recently. Yeah. So this is a great opportunity to perhaps share with our listeners, if you would, why some tests like the prostate screening test or the protocol is off base in your estimation. I know this speaks to both the science and the public perceptions and how we can better determine when to do which screenings.
Sure. I'm not against screening. I'm against screening that has not been proven to save lives. And it is true, in the 1990s, the American Cancer Society recommended prostate cancer screening before there was a study to show that it saved lives. Indeed, before any studies had started to actually assess it to see if it saved lives, the ACS did recommend prostate cancer screening. Now, eventually, and this is well before I got there, better minds prevailed, and in 1997, the ACS recommended that men be told of the potential risks and the potential benefits of prostate cancer screening, and there are significant risks associated with medical procedures caused by an abnormal screen, and men be encouraged to make a choice and make a decision. Our recommendation today is still very much one of informed decision-making when it comes to prostate cancer screening, because we do not know if it saves lives. We know that there are men who think that it has saved their lives, but we don't know that they had a prostate cancer that was going to kill them. Until we support, number one, research to try to figure out the types of cancers that are going to kill versus the kinds of cancers that can be watched because they're not going to kill. And for prostate cancer, I think we definitely need to have informed decision making. By the way, other organizations have called for informed decision making as well, not just the ACS. Now, in other things, like in lung cancer, there was a spiral CT program that was done throughout the United States in a number of places with the theory that spiral CT screening saved lives. It's only recently, in the last year, that we've actually had completed a true clinical trial to show that it actually does save lives. And that trial, by the way, shows that if you screen 26,000 people at high risk for lung cancer because of smoking history, over 10 years, you save 87 lives. lives, but you sacrifice 16 lives. 16 people died prematurely, mostly due to medical interventions caused by the screening test having an abnormal finding. So I'm not against screening. I'm for wise screening and for using screening only when we have science to show that it's beneficial. And I'm also very leery of screening at times because virtually every screen is a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. There are people who are helped and there are people who are harmed, and we need a net benefit before we can advocate a screening test.
We're speaking today with Dr. Otis Brawley, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of the American Cancer Society and author of How We Do Harm, A Doctor Breaks Ranks and Talks About Being Sick in America. Dr. Brawley, let's drill down further on the over-reliance on tests, which leads to a lot of wasted resources and, as you said, can even harm patients. We recently had the president of the National Physicians Alliance on the show talking about their good stewardship program that led to the Choosing Wisely campaign, which urges doctors and patients to curtail the use of tests in 45 targeted areas, including oncology. Now, this campaign has received a lot of widespread support, including from you, and yet you caution that this is still only a voluntary program between physicians and patients, and what's needed is an industry-wide campaign. How do we get there from here?
Yeah, the only way that we're going to get there is we're going to have to affect how people are paid. Right now, physicians, hospitals, other healthcare providers, they get paid more the more services they provide. We need to actually try to change that paradigm where they get paid for providing good service and making sure that patients stay healthy. At the same time, patients have to stop demanding a lot of things that are just not scientifically proven to be useful.
Dr. Brawley, I know that you're not only an eminent oncologist, you're also an epidemiologist, and you've noted that obesity, poor diet, and lack of exercise are going to likely overtake smoking as the most preventable cause of cancer in this country. Again, something I just don't think that is a message that we've gotten through clearly to the public. Tell us what you see in terms of the looming cost and burden to our nation due to the obesity epidemic, and how are you thinking, and how is the American Cancer Society thinking about shifting this discussion about prevention of obesity or treatment of obesity as one of our weapons against cancer?
Well, first, we have to get the word out. Many people are shocked when I say that the combination of obesity, high caloric intake, and lack of physical activity is about to overtake tobacco as the leading cause of cancer. Many people are shocked at mm-hmm. that. Truth be told, those three things, obesity, lack of physical activity, and high caloric intake, are causing and fueling increasing numbers of people with diabetes. They are an upward pressure on coronary artery disease. They cause orthopedic injury, and they, of course, cause cancer. We are going to have a tsunami of chronic disease over the next 20, 30 years. That, taken along with the fact that we are gluttonous and non-scientific and really irrational in how we consume medicine. And by the way, the politicians keep wanting to talk about rationing. I want to talk about rational, because we need to be rational in our use of medicine rather than worrying about rationing. But anyway, we have this incredible number of chronic diseases that are going to occur. We've got to get the word out. Truth be told, 11 to 15% of American adults were obese in the 1970s, and it's 35% or so who are obese today. Among black women, it's 49%.
You know, I was thinking, as you said earlier, about the trajectory of tobacco's limitation in our society. And I was thinking recently we heard where Mayor Bloomberg had just announced some very tough standards on the soda industry in terms of trying to limit it. And I think Dr. Frieden, before he went off to the CDC, he was the commissioner for Mayor Bloomberg, had suggested a tax on this. Some of this is outside the realm of healthcare. Where do the policymakers play a role in shaping some of these directions and directives for the society as a whole that will help us get to better health and better outcomes for people?
Well, I think policymakers definitely need to realize that these things are problems, be it the fact that people don't get adequate health care, and we need solutions for that. And by the way, I don't criticize people who are against the Affordable Care Act if they come up with ideas about what we can do that would actually help. But in any event, we need policymakers to actually start thinking about health care and promoting health for the public. In terms of soda taxes and that sort of thing, personally, I'm very leery of soda taxes. However, I am open to any idea about something that's going to help us decrease this obesity epidemic. If we want to study soda taxes, I definitely would support studying soda taxes. Limiting what size drink someone should get, I again have personal difficulties with that. I just don't think it's going to work. I think that legislating behavior has very rarely been beneficial in terms of the public health. But I applaud the fact that these guys are at least thinking about how are we going to promote health.
Dr. Brawley, we've talked about prevention and screening and early detection, but I'd like to focus for a moment on what seems to be a breakthrough area with cancer diagnosis and treatment in particular with regard to genomics. It seems that we are really on the brink of transforming how we diagnose and treat not just cancer, but all diseases with a big contribution from genomics. Tell us about the transformations that you expect to see in this area.
Yeah. Well, you know, many of our definitions of cancer go back 170 years, and they were autopsy patients that were studied, and people said, this is cancer, this is what killed that person. Today, we're starting to realize that what looks like cancer under the microscope may not be very aggressive, may not even need to be treated in the case of prostate cancer, certain meningiomas, and certain other cancers. They may not need to be even treated, just watch. And other things tend to be very aggressive, even though under the microscope they may not look as cancerous. And so we're starting to come up with genomic definitions of cancer, looking at the gene or series of genes and try to figure out what the genetic intent of that tissue is. It's not just what the tissue looks like. It's not just the profile of this tissue as we see it under the microscope, but what inherently within the genetics does that tissue want to do? We're redefining cancer is what we're doing.
When you talk about the redefinition of cancer diagnosis and treatment, real transformations are going on. Past genomics, can you tell us about other transformations that you're expecting to see?
Yeah, in the next 10 to 15 years, for example, I think nowadays we think about lung cancer and breast cancer. In the next 10 to 15 years, we're going to think about cancer in the genomic terms and actually say that it's this type of cancer and not even talk about an organ site. I think as we get toward that, we're going to have more targeted therapies that are actually going to look at the what's gone wrong in terms of the metabolism of the cell to make it start reproducing, and we'll be able to attack very specific targets. We're going to have drugs that have a lot less side effects than our chemotherapies today because they're very targeted.
Dr. Brawley, let me just ask maybe about one more dimension of the work of the American Cancer Society. Like other huge national organizations committed to a cause, you've been very successful at engaging the people, engaging the patients, the communities, the communities of advocates. Tell us what the American Cancer Society is focused on in that arena as we move into this new period in healthcare.
Well, we're starting to realize that our messaging is far more complicated than, you know, the marketing people want cute, quick advice, like get screened. Now the advice is going to have to be learn about this and make a decision as to whether you want to be screened in the case of prostate cancer or in the case of lung cancer. So we at the ACS are spending a lot of time thinking about and working with people who are experts in communications, trying to figure out how to convey a much more complicated message, the message on diet. and physical activity is going to be incredibly complicated as we try to get people to increase their intake of fruits and vegetables and start walking to work and that sort of thing. So we're looking at messaging, and we're looking at how to best convey complicated messages.
Dr. Brawley, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation that our listeners at Conversations should be keeping an eye on?
Well, I just came from the American Society for Clinical Oncology meeting, and this idea of targeted therapies in cancer is incredibly important. Some wonderful work being done in genomic health to try to predict these cancers that need to be treated versus these things that look like cancer that need to be watched. I actually think that the things that folks need to look at the most are also the preventative aspects. I think that we're going to come back to an era where we will have some chemo prevention drugs, where people will take specific drugs, perhaps it may be aspirin, to decrease their risk of coronary artery disease, decrease their risk of colon cancer, and maybe decrease their risk of several other diseases as well.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Otis Brawley, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer of the American Cancer Society and the author of How We Do Harm, A Doctor Breaks Ranks and Talks About Being Sick in America. Dr. Brawley, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
Thank you. It's wonderful being with you.
I'm Marietta O'Hare with this tech report. Imagine moving a robotic arm that brings a cup of latte to your lips. Now imagine doing that while completely paralyzed. That's exactly what a tetraplegic woman was able to do with the power of her own thoughts and a little help from a very committed team of scientists behind BrainGate 2. Scientists at Brown, Harvard, and Stanford, along with the VA, have been collaborating for years on a brain-robot interface that uses thought patterns in the motor cortex, the part of the brain that controls movement, to direct the actions of a robotic arm, with the hope of giving folks who are paralyzed a way to manipulate their physical world. Dr. Lee Hochberg and his team announced the breakthrough in the recent Journal of Nature. Hochberg says it comes after 40 years of advances in neuroscience.
Then, over the ensuing decades, we certainly learned more about this part of the brain. We also thankfully had the development of technologies that would allow us to record from not just a single neuron in the brain, but from dozens at least of neurons in the brain simultaneously.
Since the mid-2000s, as the science has gotten more sophisticated, along with the technology, they've been able to identify and record certain signals in the motor cortex that direct the actions of the limbs. Their first success, announced in 2006, allowed a paralyzed participant to move a cursor on a computer. They then graduated to now empowering a woman paralyzed from the neck down to move the robotic arm via a probe implanted in her motor cortex, sending her own thought commands through the external robot arm. She was able to command the arm to pick up the latte, bring it to her lips, and drink. Dr. Hochberg says it was an amazing moment for the team.
The smile on her face to see her do something that she had wanted to do for nearly 15 years since her stroke, that is just to reach out and to pick something up, in this case by thinking about it, using a robotic arm, and to take a drink. It was an incredible moment to see that smile, to know that we had, as a field, gotten to that point. It's something that I'll never forget, and I know our research team will never forget.
A second participant in the study was able to achieve similar results as well. BrainGate 2 is the result of an ongoing collaboration between neuroscientists, physical therapists, computer scientists, and mathematicians. Hochberg says this breakthrough couldn't have happened without all of that expertise. And he says what's most exciting is to find that even after 15 years of complete paralysis, the brain function controlling motor skills is still very much intact as a power that can be harnessed to give hope and function to those robbed of movement. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this tech report.
If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is a Connecting Our Communities initiative from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to WNPR, Connecticut's public radio station.